It's time for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's Quarters every week, right here on VolQuest.
Hey, good Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast. I'm Eric Kane, alongside Austin Price, Brent Hubbs, and Grant Ramey. A big shout-out, as always, to our presenting sponsors. That is Exterior Home Solutions. 25 years they've been doing it, since 1999. East Tennessee's number one choice for roofing, siding, garage, whatever that case may be. You can pick up the phone and get a free estimate by dialing 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Got a lot of questions to get into, so we're going to try to hit it running here. We'll start, a lot of these are the same questions, so I tried to combine them as much as I could. Vol, I am, Pine, they want to know about the tempo, 2024 and into 2025. It's more than just Nico. How big of an impact will losing Cooper Mays be in 2025? Can we get back to the tempo next year? And do you think the clock rules have hurt tempo and offense this year? You don't seem to get as many drives and plays as you used to.
Actually, I looked this up and compared it to the 2022 season for a story, and the numbers were really surprising to me. Tennessee's actually averaging more possessions per game in 24 than they did in 22. And they're actually averaging about the same number of plays between 22 and 24, which really surprised me, Grant, when I looked at it. It feels like that it's, you know, there's no tempo and everything's drastically different and it changes. But, I mean, Tennessee's averaging 74 snaps a game right now. They averaged 73 snaps a game in 22. But clearly they're not playing with tempo, which I think affects the offense. But their numbers are not particularly down in terms of possessions and plays.
Yeah, I don't know how to phrase it. If they're not, I mean, it does look like they're intentionally going slower, and maybe it just looked different because they were so productive in 2022. And every time they have a big play, they're rushing to the line and trying to get the next one off. So I don't know if it just optically looks different than it did a couple of years ago. But yeah, I read those numbers that you wrote, and I mean, they're a lot more similar than I would have expected going into that. But I feel like Tennessee is. What's slowing down Tennessee right now is Tennessee, not the clock rules, not whatever. It feels like they're kind of intentionally going slower. I don't know.
Is it possible that just because the defense has improved that that's why the number of possessions, you know, has grown?
I mean, potentially. I mean, I think that certainly this defense is better. And maybe that was limiting some of the offensive possessions in 22 because Tennessee's defense didn't get off the field as much. But – you know, it's weird because I looked those numbers up and I was expecting something vastly different. I'll be honest with you. I went into it looking for something, and what I found was a bit surprising to me. I knew from an explosive standpoint, Tennessee wasn't going to have the numbers that they had in 22. And 22 to me is the benchmark that everybody's going to look to when they compare Tennessee offense. Moving forward, as long as Josh Heupel's here, everybody's going to compare Heupel's offense that season to the 22 year. So that's why I used them as the benchmark. But, you know, I guess the defense has given you more possessions. I'm surprised by the number of plays, that being equal. Obviously, Tennessee is doing a good job driving the ball. They're just not finishing drives. I mean, 70% of their drives have ended in the opposing team's territory, yet they're just not scoring at the clip that they were scoring at, you know, particularly in SEC play. And so you say, well, okay, numbers are skewed because you scored 70 or whatever you scored against Kent State. Well, I mean, you did the same thing in 22. I mean, you routed a bunch of people who were non-conference teams in 22 as well. So, I mean, they're just not finishing as well. But I was a little bit surprised by those numbers. But, AP, I think you make a good point that the defense being able to get off the field gives you more possessions when you're not playing tempo. I don't think this offense works nearly as effectively when they're not in tempo. Are they trying to get in too many perfect plays, Eric? Maybe, you know, going out of bounds allows for more substitutions. You know, that affects it a little bit that way. There seems to be more stoppages in play. But I think Tennessee's creating a lot of those stoppages in play with stuff that they're doing, incompletes and different things like that.
Incompletes, not winning first down, you know, getting sacked, and you got to slow things down. And then you're facing more third downs and not third and ones. You're facing more third and six, third and sevens, and got to slow it down, make sure everybody's on the same page, try to go get the first down. Going back to what Grant said, I think a lot of it has to do with Tennessee. You know, Tennessee hurting Tennessee. But I agree. I think there's more stoppages. At least it feels like it nowadays as well. Davey Vaughn and Southern 98 want to know about the wide receivers. Wide receiver room has been average for two straight years. Is it personnel or coaching? Both. Does the room need to be overhauled? How concerning is it that in year four of Heupel's tenure, we do not have a dynamic number one wide receiver? Lack of playmakers is painfully obvious against Georgia. Seeing Mike Matthews' lack of playing time this year does not instill confidence in the upcoming wide receiver class for next year as well. Austin, what do you think about the wide receivers?
I don't think anybody needs to be fired. Yeah, I mean, you know, for whatever reason, the group has, you know, had a down year. You know, I don't think, you know, it still boils down to Jimmy's and Joe's at the end of the day. I don't think that, I think Tennessee in certain ways is still making some plays. In other ways, they're, you know, the receiver room has shot themselves in the foot. But let's not act like this is not a group of receivers that wasn't running wide open 3.5 games ago, and Nico was, you know, couldn't find
two game stretch, Florida and Alabama, they were wide open,
yeah. You know, and again, which goes back to what Grant said a minute ago, like Tennessee shooting Tennessee, right? Like, I mean, Nico gets it together, and then all of a sudden the receivers can't catch, and, you know, little things like that. So, I mean, I don't know. I get the frustration, because at the end of the day, everybody wants Jalen Hyatt running routes on air. And that's what his hub said a minute ago, too, also hitting the nail on the head. Everybody's going to look back to that one year and, like, you know, I don't know if that's really attainable again. I mean, like, just the amount of routes on air that he ran that year. But, I mean, at the same time, Tennessee's had some guys running wide open. They didn't hit them. Then when they did hit them, they didn't catch them. So, I don't think it's just, like, the receivers.
I'll say this, Grant. Forget Biletnikoff, okay? Forget Jalen Hyatt being the best receiver in the country. Like, see the improvement, the development. And I know Heupel's staff just got here, but look at Cedric Tillman in 21. Look at Hyatt from 21 to 22. I'm not saying you have to go win the Biletnikoff, but, you know, that type of – I mean, Velus Jones as well. I mean, in that first year, you know, with that offseason with this coaching staff, look at that development. And you haven't seen anybody take, you know, those big of leaps, you know, since those trio of guys, I would imagine.
Yeah, development is definitely something that you could point out here that needs to be better. I think for whatever reason, receivers are kind of on the chopping block this week, but it's just been different groups of this offense throughout the season. The offensive line for a stretch was trash. The quarterback was missing guys like you were talking about, Florida and Alabama. They've had drops. Dylan Sampson, best player on the team, most productive. He's had fumble issues on that side of the field. That's killed drives, big drives, when Tennessee needed points in some of those games. So it just kind of like it rotates around to who gets the blame. I don't think wide receivers have been great. I don't think they've been terrible. They got to be better. I think everybody in this offense has to be better and find a way to click together, because it just feels like the last month or however long it's been, 5-6 weeks, that they've just kind of taken turns playing subpar, and they got to be better.
Do we think that the wide receivers are on the block this week because they just haven't performed very well against Georgia since Josh Heupel's been here? I mean, in terms of big plays, you go back and look at it. They had 3 20-yard pass plays in year one. They had some guys running open that they missed. But since then, I think they've got 2 completions of 20-plus yards in the last 3 matchups with Georgia. And so is this the narrative that because Kirby Smart's done a better job than anybody of limiting Tennessee's vertical passing game after year one. So is the discussion of wide receivers this week more about, it's another year of Georgia, another year where nobody's open at the receiver position? AP, is that part of why the narrative is what it is about receivers this week?
I mean, I think in part, but also you go back to the week before. I mean, Brazel drops that 50-yard bomb because he leaps when he didn't need to leap. I mean, you know, there have been other instances, you know, the last several games where the receivers have kind of let the offense down. Much like, you know, back in October, there were throws where Nico let the offense down. I mean, you know, so, I mean, I do think it's more recency bias is the fact that the receivers have struggled to catch, struggled to make plays, struggled to get separation, because, you know, just a few games ago, it was the opposite.
Well, and here's the other thing, too. I mean, again, the benchmark is 22, Grant, and 22, Tennessee had 56 completions of 20 yards or more, and 24 through – what, 10 games, they set at 28, exactly one half of the number that they had in 13 games in 22. So that number is going to go up, but this is a steady drop. It's 56 in 22. It's 34 in 23. That was all Joe's fault. Now it's 28 in 24. You know, is it all on the quarterback, or is some of this on the receivers? I think you got to put some of it on the receivers for sure.
Yeah, I mean, 2022, you had a quarterback that wasn't missing deep shots. You had wide receivers that weren't dropping deep shots. You had a offensive line that was not, I don't remember Hendon Hooker running for his life as much as Nico has at times, especially Saturday night. I mean, even if it's just you're blaming wide receivers because it's happened with Georgia consistently, I even look at that as more of a program thing. Like, I don't think this program's ready to win at Georgia yet. Like, they got to be better on the offensive line. They got to be better coaching scheme in that kind of game. Like, I can't pick them to win at Georgia or Alabama. Maybe they could beat Georgia at home next year. They've shown they could take that step and beat Alabama at home. But I think the whole thing, wide receivers, everybody else, coaching staff, recruiting, portal, all that stuff's got to take another step before you're on that level.
Well, at some point, you got to start winning some of those road games. Maybe it's not Georgia at Georgia, but if you're going off of your theory of, you know, if they can't beat Georgia at all and you can't win at Alabama or at Florida, then you're looking at a minimum three loss team next year. So,
right. I mean, not Florida. I would not throw Florida in that. Like, they should have won in Gainesville 2023. They should win next year.
How do you say that, though? I mean, they've not won down there since, I know, you know, I know, since George Bush was in his first term.
Right.
Here's another question I've got about receivers. I know we got to get moving on, but I think this is an interesting question, at least for me. Does it take too long to get guys ready in this offense? Should they specialize or package some things for receivers? We've had the Mike Matthews question all year long, right?
Yep.
Chris Brazel has not been what I thought Chris Brazel would be. Jalin Hyatt was great in 22. Everybody was ready to put him on a Greyhound in the 21 season and send him away because he wasn't very good. Now, Tillman was a veteran and jumped right into this offense and was effective in year one. Velus Jones, they used him pretty well in year one. But is it taking too long for guys to grasp this system? I mean, Brew was okay in 22, right? I mean, it wasn't an every game 5-6 catch type deal. I mean, he was kind of sporadic a little bit in 22. Do they need to look at, hey, we're going to do certain things for young players to get them going and get them started? Is that something that you think lacks in this offense? Or is that just reaching for something when you try to figure out what's going on with the receivers?
I don't know. I mean, like Squirrel got some playing time in 22.
It was mop up though, and that one start. It was mop, you know, up and the one start in the Orange Bowl.
Yeah, the Orange Bowl. That's right. And then as a sophomore, played a lot more.
Year two,
and so I just think college coaches fall into the trap of, well, he's a veteran and he's paid his dues and he knows where to be, and that's not just a receiver thing. That's a every coach thing. And like, I think that you know, you look across the board. I'm not saying they don't play young kids, because they do, but like, I think when you see some kids struggling to get there, I think the coaches, we talk about, Hubs, you brought up the fact that, you know, are they searching for perfection or whatever? I think coaches search for that. Like, well, he had that one MA, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, we can't trust him. You know, I mean, like that's to me, that's becomes far fetched, right? I mean, I don't know. Like, I just, You're not going to get perfect play out of a freshman, but if you can get somewhat perfect play, then I'm playing them.
Dalval5 wants to know, I know it's probably somewhere, but what is the new transfer portal schedule officially? What is the overlap with the playoffs, et cetera? The transfer portal window in December is from December 9th through the 28th. That's going to come after championship weekend. Signing day will be done. The early signing period will be done by then, so your focus will be retaining your roster, preparing for the playoffs and or bowl game, and transfer portal. That'll be your big focus in that month. That's kind of what's overlapping. You know, the first round of the playoffs are 19-20. The second round, the semifinals are New Year's weekend. And, of course, the championship is later on, like January the 20th, I believe. So that's the rundown there. NWGA Vol says, in honor of Senior Day, which of this group of seniors has been your favorite to cover? Are there any particular seniors that you believe the staff will target to replace
production through the portal. Who are some of your favorite seniors that'll be going through senior day? And it's confusing on if this is senior day one or two and who could come back and all that and more. Thankfully, we're almost done with this. But talk about some seniors, guys.
Well, for me, it's Cooper Mays, one, because I've known him for so long. And it's Big Omari Thomas. You know, Big O, I will legitimately miss seeing that guy walk into a room. Always got a smile, always super friendly, very respectful, comes from a great family. I'll miss Cooper's interactions. As Hubs knows, I love listening to him talk about UT parking services, getting tickets, you know, outside the media room. It's always
among
colorful.
Several topics.
Or it's always on brand for Mays, for any Mays. It's colorful. And so, I mean, I guess for me, like, you know, there's a bunch of good kids that are going to leave. Hubs, I know you have a fondness for Brew and just a bunch of good kids, man. Just a bunch of good kids.
Well, I mean, I think when you cover them from recruiting all the way through, you get to know them in a different world. And I don't cover them in recruiting the way Austin and Matt and does. And Eric, you did some of these guys, you know, that are going through here as well. But, you know, the one thing I like to see about guys is guys grow and you know, become men and all those things. But I really take a fondness to the guys who don't change dramatically. Like who they are, their personality doesn't change. The Cooper Mays you see today is very much personality-wise the Cooper Mays that you saw coming out of high school. As he matured and grown, sure, but the core of who Cooper is the same. The same with Omari Thomas. Omari Thomas was the most polite human being at Mr. Football in Nashville before he committed to Tennessee, as he is at his final press conference that he does at Tennessee. He's never changed who he is. And, you know, I think that's cool to see. There's a bunch of good guys, but, you know, the ones you cover the longest, you know, you kind of take a fondness to. And again, I tip my cap to these guys because in a day and age where you can bail, a bunch of guys didn't bail. And Grant, they could have bailed. I mean, look, you got NCAA sanctions breathing down your neck. There's all kinds of talk about bowl bans. The coaching staffs that you committed to aren't here. Lots of things are going against you. And all these guys stayed, not only stayed, but they're leaving this place a lot better than they inherited it.
Yeah. My first thought when I read the question was Brew. Seeing those quotes from what Tuesday talking about he's a Southern Cal kid and Knoxville is something that he refers to as home now. Like if you think back to the start of his career, the Texas and Southern Cal and the moves he made, it's cool to see him transfer here and settle in. And he's also just what's his initiative? AEDs and CPR training. Like I think that speaks to who Brew McCoy is off the field, the maturity level, like what kind of person he is. It's cool to see kids with their platform, using their platform in that way, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, even guys that have transferred in, like, and of course, Brew's obviously one of them, but he's been here a little longer. I mean, Omar Norman Lott, you know, makes a point to come over and talk. I mean, like, you know, makes a point to come over and say hi, hello and see how you're doing. And again, that kid's a kid that, you know, when he was out on Ball Club Confidential, talked about, you know, watching people get killed in the streets of Sacramento. You know, and then, you know, Miles Kitzelman, who's going to be here less than a year from, you know, gavel to gavel and, you know, genuinely loves this place as much as Big O, you know, and I don't know if that's possible. So, I mean, you know, just a bunch of good kids, man.
All right. A couple of posters want to know about offensive coordinator. Do you guys think anything drastic is needed, like a new offensive coordinator or some sort of big change on the offense, or is it strictly a lack of playmakers at wide receiver and the offensive line causing the problems on offense? Additionally, would Heupel be open to adding a co-OC that might bring in some new concepts to mess with his current offense since the offense is no longer a constant tempo team? Brent, I can't speak for Josh Heupel, but in no world, he's the co-OC. As head coach, he's the co-OC, right? Now, in terms of bringing in an advisor, maybe, but it's in terms of the co-OC, I don't see that ever happening.
I mean, yeah, I think you can make a contention he's the OC in a lot of ways. You know, now, let me say this. I mean, he brought in Alex Golish at Central Florida, who had some different ideas. Alex Golish came from Iowa State and was not a tempo guy. You know, they played three tight ends and they did some different things. That was a bit of an outside-the-box move for Josh Heupel there. You know, I don't know. I mean, Josh Heupel's not a guy who makes a lot of changes. I mean, I don't know that he's ever let a coach go. I don't expect him to let anybody go on this deal. They've got to execute better. They have to do a self-examination on why they're not executing as well as they need to. They've got to do a deep dive on where they are on the offensive line, what are they lacking, what do they need there development-wise, those types of things. The sack numbers, again, I'm going to compare it to 22. It's in that story, not drastically greater this year than it was in 22. The difference in 22 is it didn't matter if they got sacked because the next play could be 50 yards. This team can't overcome negative plays as well as the 22 team could.
Or penalties.
Yeah, because of where they are in the passing game right now. So, I mean, you know, I don't know that he's going to bring in and some outside advisor who's going to have drastic concept differences to where they are. I think in this league and in college football, and you guys jump on in here, I think that you have to always be evolving, right? I mean, how much time do we think schools in this league spend in the summertime after the 21 and 22 season figuring out how to defend Tennessee?
A lot.
So there's a punch. Now, what's Tennessee's counterpunch? What are you going to counterpunch to? That's what coaching is. That's the innovation and the creativity. What is your counterpunch to what teams have done to you the last couple of years? Okay, you could chalk up last year a lot about quarterback, right? Okay, fine. But now where are you at, and what's your counterpunch to what you're seeing from teams? How many times have we said or heard in a postgame, they showed us looks that we hadn't seen on film before? How many times have you heard that this year? Several different times, right?
You heard it Saturday.
Yeah. What's your counterpoint? What's your counterpunch? That's what you got to do as an offensive staff. You got to have counterpunches.
Yeah. I mean, football is a game of adjustments, not just in the football game. And that's why it's so maddening when it feels like, and I mean, none of us are football experts, but doesn't feel like there was a lot of adjustments in a game like on Saturday. But you know, off season to off season, because I mean, you're not reinventing the wheel here. You're adjusting, and then you're, as Hub said, you're throwing counter punches, and you're always trying to get better. So, in terms of going back to the question, like, you know, OC, co-OC, all that type of stuff. You know, I mean, you're always looking for advisors and stuff like that. We'll see exactly kind of what the move is this off season to try to help that offense out. Got a playoff question. Seems like the playoff. The 9-game SEC schedule is dead. If ESPN dangles the cash out there, do we truly feel like Sankey and the SEC would stand firm until strength of schedule becomes a priority in the college football playoff selection process? Is that something that gets voted on by each member institution?
Yes.
I mean, right now the committee's telling us that strength of schedule doesn't matter at all. So, yeah, I mean, I think I've been firm, and I think SEC, if you want to act like you're the best conference, play another conference game. But you got four teams with an 8-2 record, and on a neutral site would beat Indiana by 20, in my opinion, right now, until we'll see them play against Ohio State. Grant, I feel like there's not a whole lot of incentive to go up there in terms of the playoff. Now, again, to the poster's credit, if ESPN dangles all that money out there, that'll be an interesting decision to see what Sankey would do.
I mean, if Indiana gets in this thing in 3 weeks, then I don't think there's any reason to go to 9 games, and I don't think there's any reason to schedule any other power conference games. I would schedule Kennesaw State and UTEP and Middle Tennessee State and an FCS school, and I would hope that my SEC schedule was, you know, you get a draw like Indiana got, where they played the worst of the Big Ten. I mean, I think that's what the route you got to go down, because right now that's what you said, Eric. They're telling you that's what matters, is how many games you win, how many you win by, what you look like doing it, regardless if it's UCLA, Michigan on down years, stuff like that. Like, figure out four bad teams to play and hope your conference schedule is light and see what you look like in November.
And, of course, next Tuesday we'll understand, say, whatever the outcome is for Indiana, Ohio State, say Ohio State wins, but by how much?
Right.
And that will tell us – I mean, if Indiana wins, then – you know, this conversation isn't worth having. But if Ohio State wins that football game, which I think everybody thinks is going to happen, if so, by how much? And what does the committee do about that? You know, 7 points, 14 points, 21 points? I mean, you know, where are they going to move them? And I think that would help answer this question a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're going to add a conference game, another conference game, unless you're going to expand the playoffs. Now, I think the expansion of the playoffs is coming. I think that's where your money is going to be at that. I think this thing's going to go to 16 teams. Then you probably play 9 conference games, right? And make as much money as you can make. But right now, from a competition standpoint, it doesn't benefit you to play nine conference games. Here's the thing about the playoff discussion, Austin, that's a little maddening to me. Why is all the discussion about splitting hairs on three SEC teams? Why are you not splitting hairs with the three other Big Ten teams or a couple of Big Ten teams with those three SEC teams? I mean, it almost feels like they're setting it up that it has to be the same number of SEC teams and the
that's
same number
doing.
Of Big Ten teams yeah. in the playoff deal.
That's
and that's wrong. Doing. That's wrong if you're trying to get the 12 best teams on the field. So does this discussion next week ever become about how the non-champion Big Ten teams stack up to the non-champion SEC teams? Are we just going to make it, well, the SEC's got four and they only have three spots, so we're going to split hairs between those? Because that's the only thing that was talked about last night or Tuesday night.
Yeah, I mean, I think my thing is, like, if you look at the options two, like not option one, but options like two, three, and four of the Big 12 and ACC, are they on par with Indiana, who I think right now, I know they've won all their games, and maybe they beat Ohio State Saturday, and we'll all sitting here be going, see, they'll all be sitting here critiquing Ohio State's deal.
The committee knew what they were doing.
Yeah, but like, let's say they don't. Let's say they lose by 17 or 14. Let's just say 14, two touchdowns. You know, do we think that Clemson, SMU, Colorado, those teams can play with Indiana? And so, like, my point, which goes back to Hubs's point, is, like, you can't be going, okay, it's got to be four Big Ten and four SEC. Like, sometimes it might be three SEC and four Big Ten and two ACC. Like, or it could be five SEC and two Big Ten and, you know, multiple Big 12. I mean, I think Hubs is right. They're setting this up to be a four and four because they don't want to make the two big conferences, the ones that are the alphas here, mad.
It feels like to me every Tuesday night they're hitting sort by total number of losses, and then they're ranking those teams by those number of losses to fit that four and four or whatever those numbers
yes.
are. Because they have a teleconference after the rankings are released, and it's Ward Manuel just saying the committee just felt like it's just an eye test after that, you know, sort by loss column. Total number of losses. Like
I wish you would come out and say, yeah, well, that loss was like a month and a half ago, so we don't really think that's a big deal anymore. Yeah.
They just struggle to make sense of their own rankings, which
of course, because they talk in circles. I mean, right, like, no. I mean, I don't care what anybody says about Notre Dame. They've not played a soul. And then, you know, outside of Texas A&M, and you know, they lost to a Northern Illinois team that continues. I mean, they're seventh in their own league. Seventh, not the conference champs, not the runner-up, not even the third or fourth team. Seventh. Like, how are you just neglecting that loss? It's like it didn't happen. It's kind of like the Kentucky win in Oxford. Just it's like, oh, that's a great win for Kentucky. You know, what? Kentucky's got one conference win.
Yeah, that make a whole lot of sense. All right, we'll continue on. We'll answer more of your questions. But first, let's get a word from our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Get Neyland loud this football season with Exterior Home Solutions, East Tennessee's first choice for exterior renovations.
That phone number is 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. They're the number one choice for East Tennessee for 25 years, since 1999. That is Exterior Home Solutions. All right, got a couple here from Nashville 615. We'll work through them pretty quickly. At this point, is it fair to say that Josh Heupel's offensive scheme isn't as effective as it was in 2021-2022? It's rare to see guys just wide open like we did in the first 2 years. Again, Brent, you wrote about this week, comparing specifically 22 to 24's offense.
Well, guys aren't running wide open. They're not getting as much man coverage, so some of the switch route stuff is not there. When they've had those, they haven't hit on some of them, as we talked about earlier, which changes the narrative of that. I mean, how many times do we say after a game, boy, if Nico had hit those, he'd had a 400-yard day? Or if the receiver had caught the ball, he'd have had a 400-yard day.
He would have had a four-touchdown day.
You know, so, I mean, part of it is execution. And again, I don't know that we'll ever see 22 again. And I think 21 was – I don't know that the rest of the league put a whole lot of stock in Tennessee in 21, right? Like, it's that they're not very good. And all of a sudden, wow, this thing's a problem. Okay, we got to figure out how to deal with it. And they've been – you know, they scheme it up better than they have the first couple years, yes. I don't think it's been completely resolved because there's been too many people open. They just haven't executed. You know, they haven't delivered it. Now, I think Tennessee's got to be more innovative on some things, but it's still not like the whole thing is everybody's just never open, okay? I mean, they were never open against Georgia in 22, and they were never open against Georgia in 24, right? But, I mean, they've had guys open. They just haven't executed very well.
And again, let's not forget, like, I understand the conversation is the passing game, and 100% it needs to be, but it's not like Tennessee's offense is trash. Tennessee, yet again, has a running back or a team that has rushed for over 2,000 yards every year Josh Heupel's been here. Tennessee's averaging over 200 yards a game. I mean, it's like Tennessee's running the football just fine, but it's you know, passing off that's obviously not been where it needs to be this year.
It's just harder than it was the first couple of years, which means you can't overcome the mistakes that you could. You got a holding penalty in 22. Nobody cared. Right? Like, oh, okay, we'll get another play. Yeah. I mean, it didn't matter.
4 yards.
Four yards. It didn't matter. That's just not where you are. Is that talent? Probably. Is that execution? Absolutely. Is that play calling? Probably. I mean, it's probably all encompassing, you know, plus the defense has got a better beat on what you're doing right now.
Couple more here. We'll hit them quickly from Nashville 615. Austin, who do you think will be the starting wide receivers in 2025?
No clue.
Just take a guess. I mean,
who's here?
Yeah, exactly.
Say Mike Matthews to avoid the follow threads on the board.
Is Squirrel here? Is Brazel here? Is Mike Matthews here? I mean, I'm not trying to be a. I'm not trying.
People
to be
listening right now will say, "Why wouldn't they be here?"
Correct, but like, guess what? In this world of the transfer portal, you just never know. I mean, like, some kids may come in there and go, "I need X amount to stay," and Tennessee may go, "No." Like, and you know, and I don't know that any of that's going to happen. They may all be that. If they're all back, then I would tell you Brazel, Squirrel, and Mike Matthews, and that'll be the three I would tell you. Now, if they're not, then who knows?
Grant, is it fair to question whether Josh Heupel's offense needs a dynamic runner to hit its ceiling? I mean,
running quarterback.
Yeah, running quarterback. Like, Hendon Hooker had the ability to run, but again, like, not like Hendon Hooker if they were drawing up 10 plays for him to run a game, and they're not doing that for Nico. But Nico's got his capability. I would say no. I mean, you don't have to have
Josh
a dynamic.
Josh Dobbs was 10 times the runner Hendon Hooker.
Yeah.
Hendon Hooker could pick his spots and make a play.
Yes.
I don't think there's that big of a difference running between Hendon and Nico.
I agree.
Athletic ability, speed, elusiveness, whatever, strength. Maybe it's Nico needs to be a fifth-year senior or whatever Hendon was in a couple of years ago. Like, maybe that comes with experience. I do think what AP said, he just picks his spots a little bit better. Hendon did. I think Nico could become that. I don't think you got to be Mike Vick back there to run this offense. I think you just got to pick your spots and execute it.
But can you imagine if Mike Vick did run this offense? With the tempo, though? Not the offense that everybody's been piling on today. With that dead horse has been beat to death, and it's a bag of bones.
the old school offense before everybody figured it out. And yes. You had people flat-footed.
Anybody want to guess how many yards Hendon Hooker ran for in 22?
It was 400-something.
430
yards.
Yep.
Man.
Nico's ran for 240 or 239.
No.
All right, 200-yard games, he's on track.
Which one of two position groups concern you the most going into 2025? I would say offensive line and probably wide receiver. Obviously, running back, you're going to have questions there. Defensive back, I mean, you know, again, if people come back, I mean, you feel good about your secondary for the most part. Linebacker's experience. Defensive line, there's enough bodies. So I would say wide receivers and offensive line would be my two.
Well, I would say the offensive line, and I would put the offensive line ahead of anybody else.
Only because there's so much forced change. They can't roll them back out there, Hubs.
There's no experience. I mean, we don't know. Look, I think Mike Matthews is talented. I don't know what's holding him back. But I don't know how good, you know, Sham is. I don't know how good Jesse Perry is going to be. I don't know how good William Satterwhite is. I don't know where Bennett Warren is. I don't know what David Sanders looks like adjusting. I mean, there's just more unknowns on the offensive line than there are other positions on this team coming back in 25, starting with the center position.
AP, this one's you. Loud noises about Darion Smith. Has he had a good senior year? Thoughts of him as a prospect? Sting factor if he flips to Auburn. He's obviously not the highest rated prospect. However, if we miss on Campbell, Isaiah Campbell, that leaves our defensive line class a little thinner.
He's fine. He's a solid player. There's no sting factor at all if he flips. Like, at the end of the day, if you're counting on him to play next year, then, you know, I just don't think that's where his game's at. I think he's a guy that's going to help you in year two, three, four, not in year one. So I don't think there's any sting factor. I think you just go to the portal and they'll get you another defensive lineman. Like, I'm not trying to hate on the kid. I mean, good, solid player. And you need those in every class. But, like, there's no sting factor if he flips. I don't think Tennessee's going to bat an eye if he doesn't end up here.
Loud Noises also wants to know, is there any in-state prospects who might be jumping on the board late due to senior tape, like
no.
Deshaun or, of course, outside of Dewan Morris?
No. And, I mean, you know, that's not senior tape with Dewan Morris. That's just Tennessee wanting a bigger back and, you know, he went elsewhere.
And really, Bishop, it's not like Bishop jumped off the scene late either. He was in the conversation as a, you know, going into that senior season too.
Correct.
ZJS Vols, likelihood Isaiah Campbell to North Carolina and Darion Smith to Auburn. Give me some percentages, AP.
I would not say that about Isaiah Campbell. I mean, I think it's very much 50-50 right now. I think he's coming off of the UNC high. I think Tennessee's been the team to beat. I do think that the closeness to home is something you have to watch. But I would also tell you that he's had some really good dialogue with Tennessee in the last 48 hours. That makes me think Tennessee's still very much in this. Looking probably at a decision sometime next week over Thanksgiving.
And then going back to what you said on the question before, if you miss out on one or both or whatever, probably portal rather than high school at this stage.
Well, yeah, correct. At this stage. And then you just go to the portal and get somebody that's more ready-made to help you. Even if you're saying we're not going to go and spend a ton of money on, a high-end guy, you can go find a kid at a lower-level school and they're going to have been in a college weight room and be able to help you quicker than, you know, some high school players.
Grant, Port City Vol wants to know, if Tennessee ends up being one of the first teams out of the playoffs, should we expect a high number of opt-outs for the bowl game? Yes.
Because it's going to feel like the NIT. I mean, bowl games, there are a lot of bowl games that'll still have meaning for teams that weren't in the playoff picture. But for those teams that are 13, 14, 15, 16, whatever, like, I think the fans are going to opt out of those bowl games because it's going to feel like you missed out on the big one.
It's why the conference and the athletic directors in the conference, or the athletic directors specifically tied to a school, are going to need to find better destinations than they currently have. I've said for a while, the SEC destinations are not very good. Nobody cares about Nashville, Birmingham, Charlotte, Shreveport. I mean, even the Florida ones can get tiresome if you end up there a bunch. Like, I'm telling you, going to New York and Yankee Stadium, there's no bad time of the year to go to New York. San Diego, you can get 70 degrees every day. Las Vegas, you can just go gamble your life away. I mean, like, there's some good bowl.
We'll never see Grant again if we go out there.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. The Athletic wrote a couple weeks ago, like, if Tennessee misses the playoff, they could slip to the Las Vegas Bowl. I don't think that would be the worst thing in the world. I mean, is anybody itching to go back to Orlando? Like, because all these other teams could, South Carolina, Texas A&M, whatever. Like, I don't think that's, like, some disastrous scenario. At least it would be something new.
For fans, I think it would be fantastic. I think they would be geeked to go out there and play at Allegiant Stadium and do all that. You know, so, I mean, like, again, I think for the conference, you know, they want to get as many in the playoff as they can. But, like, for those teams that don't make it and you're going still to go the bowl route, you need to get better bowl destinations. And I've been saying that.
Grant, I know a lot of it comes down to the, you know, a lot of times the program can be like, no, we're not going there. We're going to try to get in this. But isn't it's a newer bowl, but isn't that a lower tier bowl? It used to be tied into the SEC West, but isn't that like a lower tier bowl? Like,
it is a lower tier bowl. It is a lower tier bowl, but what the Athletic wrote was, you know, South Carolina's playing so well that they could get one of those better bowl games. Texas A&M's up there too. Like, the SEC teams that are going to miss the playoffs with Tennessee in that mix, like, those other teams could jump ahead of Tennessee just so Tennessee doesn't repeat going back to a bowl game that they've been to in the last X number of years.
Yeah. Well, they've not been to Tampa in a while. So, like, Tampa, I could see them wanting Tennessee. And South Carolina's been to Tampa.
I'm out on Tampa because it's no longer the Outback Bowl, and there's not going to be that prime rib in the press box.
It's going to be Bloomin' Onion.
at 10 a.m. on New Year's morning.
Here's the quick thing on bowls too. I mean, this is the problem bowls have is it's not just the opt out of players, but how many programs want to spend the money and go down there for a week to hang out as opposed to we'll just practice at home and then we'll fly in for the game. We'll treat it like a regular road game, like the Las Vegas Bowls on the 27th.
Yeah, that's the bad part.
I mean, how many people in the program want to go, hey, man, let's go do Christmas in Vegas. Let's fly out the 22nd, and we'll spend a week out there versus can we just go the 26th like it's a Friday before a Saturday game on the 27th? And is that where bowls are going to get to as opposed to, you know, hey, we're going to do beach day at this bowl or all this other stuff that nobody wants to do, right?
The high-end players, it's always like walk-ons. Yeah, TV crews are out there filming, you know.
We don't go cover that event.
Yeah, yeah. People aren't interested. And that's a continual problem with bowls as well, is they're no longer this week-long reward for everybody. It's like, okay, let's go get this done, or let's go let the young players play in a scrimmage-type game that nobody – really remembers whether it's a big deal or not, and let's get going. Now, is Texas A&M and Mike Elko, would their fan base be more excited about where they are? Probably. First-year coach, certainly. I mean, South Carolina's – I mean, that's a team that a lot of people thought would be really bad. Okay. You know, but, I mean, are Arkansas fans excited if they get to 6 wins? I mean, Eli Drinkwitz is excited, but is the Missouri fan base excited about the fact that they're going to be bowl eligible?
Did they buy the T-shirts?
I mean, that's the issue.
You buy bowl tickets, you get the T-shirt.
Okay.
Comes with it.
Is that right?
No.
All right, let's move on here. Leroy Jenkins wants to know, in your opinion, is Joey Halsley still calling plays? The line has been it's Halsley with input from Heupel. Any chance that has flipped in the last couple of weeks? Austin, I think you've been asked about this a few times.
Yeah, I said, you know, second half at Florida, things started to change around, in my opinion. So, yeah, I think Hype's way more involved. I mean, he's always been involved, but I mean, I think it's probably more him right now.
I just remember his answer to the Will Brooks interception. Somebody asked, like, what did you think when you say, he's like, I don't know. I had my head in the play sheet. I was ready to go back on offense. He didn't even see that play. Hoover_Vol, do you think coaches are allowed transition years in this current age with coaching salaries where they are, plus NIL, plus transfer portal, plus et cetera? It seems coaches have a much shorter leash for rebuilding years. This question stems from Brian Kelly calling LSU's current team a transition team.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's actually – I would say they have more time now because nobody wants – these buyouts are so massive, nobody wants to pay, you know, $60 million, $45 million on top of all the other stuff they got to come up with money for. So I think what you're going to see is, you know, kind of what happened to Florida State. Look – you got to make changes. There's going to be mass firings of coordinators more so now than the old days. I think the coordinators are going to be more on the chopping block than the head coaches.
UTJ36, obviously this staff doesn't have a great track record on the road against quality opponents. Looking at potential playoff field, assuming Tennessee is on the road in the first round if it gets in, which teams do you think Tennessee matches up the best with? Which teams would give us the most problems on their home fields? Grant, I know, you know, Tuesday's rankings, Tennessee's the first team out, but Tennessee gets in there. Boy, sign me up to go to Notre Dame. I'd take that in a heartbeat. Now, you might need Notre Dame to lose to get in. That's one of those scenarios. But, like, if Tennessee was matched up on the road at Notre Dame, sign me up 10 times out of 10. I think that would favor Tennessee, in my opinion. That's just one of the teams.
Yeah, that would be something you would kind of, I don't know, circle. I don't think you'd want to go to Penn State and do a whiteout night game if you got one of those on the schedule. I think you'd be fine going to Bloomington just because it's not a very big atmosphere compared to what SEC teams are used to playing in. I mean, maybe you go there and Indiana whips you, but, like, I think that's one. I don't know what the other ones were. Notre Dame was one that kind of jumped out. I don't think they would match up SEC on SEC if they could avoid it. Maybe I'm mistaken there. I don't know. What are some of the other options out there?
I mean, yeah, in terms of the SEC, you know, Georgia, Ole Miss.
You're going to be playing an SEC or a Big Ten team because, you know, the facts are.
Miami or the ACC will get one of the four. There's right now it's a group of five getting one of the four.
Yeah, but then the Big 12 champion that is the 12 seed in BYU. The way it was this past week. So, I mean, you're either going to be playing and you know, a league game that's in the playoff, or you're going to be going to a Big Ten school.
And yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but That would be a road game for the Big 12, right?
You could go to Boise State if Boise State wasn't the higher ranked than a Big 12 champ, or you could go to, I guess, Colorado or BYU.
Yep. All right. Crayon says, through the current sample size of Nico, is it more likely that he's a Joe Milton-type career or 2022 Hendon Hooker-type career? What has to ensure the latter? What needs to happen to make sure that the former doesn't happen?
Well, I mean, who saw Hendon Hooker when he left Virginia Tech having the Hendon Hooker type career? Again, like, I think it was Grant that said this earlier, like the age stuff matters. And so, like, you remember he's 19 years old or whatever he is, and Hendon Hooker was 23, 24 years old, you know, when he became Hendon Hooker. So, I mean, how much better, you know, do they get when they are?
Now, that didn't translate for Joe Milton, just to be fair.
No, it didn't, correct. Yeah. But, like, again, like, Hendon was a playmaker at Virginia Tech, but nobody saw him doing what he did here when he came here.
I think everybody just needs to relax on Nico. He's going to be really good. I think he's going to be fine. Like, we don't have any patience. We want, you know, instant success, instant this and that. But, like, I mean, some of those throws he makes to the sideline are Sunday throws, and he's making them as a redshirt. Oh, he's going to be fine. He's going to be a good football player. It's not going to happen on day one, as we've seen.
Yeah, $2 million changes everybody's perspective.
That's true.
Yep.
Yeah, 10 games. Feels like a lot of that sample size is already there for some people. Vol124 says, do you think we have been so dependent on the defensive line getting to the quarterback pressure this year that we were not prepared for a situation at Georgia when Beck was so comfortable? I question whether we even practice specialized blitzing packages. Brent, at the core of this defense, and Tim Banks is an aggressive unit. Of course, they practice blitzing. We've seen them blitz from the second, third layer bunches of times this season. I mean, the fact that Tennessee just got no pressure, I mean, you know, I think you said this, no, not taking anything away from Carson Beck, but goodness gracious, anybody could be back there and pick apart a defense that they had all day, and that's kind of where you were on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it was 7-on-7 for him on Saturday. Now, here's where Tim Banks got himself, out of whack and wasn't sure what to do, okay? I mean, according to PFF, they blitzed Carson Beck 15 times. He was 12 of 15 for 148 yards and a touchdown. So do you keep blitzing? I mean, that's to me, that's the question. I mean, I think they tried to do blitz, and when it didn't get there, they didn't think they could cover anybody. And so then they said, well, let's see if we can do the loops and the stunts and the twist and try to get there. And the fact of the matter is this: Georgia's O-line, which was awful at Ole Miss, did a 180 and blocked the absolute crap out of Tennessee. Give them credit. I mean, they did. Tennessee's defensive line didn't step up, play the way they needed to. Georgia picked up the blitzes. Maybe Tim Banks wasn't exotic enough at different points, Grant. I don't know. But they tried to blitz a bunch of times, and Georgia ate the blitz up. They're a little bit damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah.
Once he hit that 30-yard pass to Dominic Lovett and got hot.
Yeah, real quick, Grant. I mean, 12. This according to PFF, 12 of 15, as Brent just said, on 16 dropbacks, wind blitz, 148 yards and a touchdown. He was 1 for 3 on 5 total dropbacks in the game when he was considered under pressure. So on 5 dropbacks in the football game, Carson Beck was under pressure. I mean, that's the stat that's just like, I mean, what the heck? I mean, you should be getting pressure from 4 men with this defensive line, right? And then on the flip side, Nico was under pressure 37.2% of his dropbacks in the football game. I mean, that's the story right there. Like, it's just blitzing, 4 man, whatever the case may be, you were not affecting or not pressuring Carson Beck.
Right, you blitzed 15 times and you had 0 quarterback hurries in the box score. 0, not 1. I mean, if you're not getting there, then the blitz is not working. If you can't get there with your front four, you can't at least pressure him with your front four. Nothing's going to work. I think that's not to channel your inner Josh Heupel, but you know it's 1-on-1 matchups, and you got to win them. And Tennessee didn't win them.
We'll do 2 more. This is from about Dylan Sampson. Dylan Sampson's the MVP of this team. Doesn't get the recognition that he deserves. What former Vol didn't get national recognition that was deserved? Let's obviously move past Peyton Manning and how he missed it on the Heisman. Anybody else? It doesn't have to be to that degree, but anybody else that jumps off the thought page for you?
I mean, 2001, Travis Stevens was a terrific player. He had a great year. A great year. 2000, Travis Henry was all really Tennessee had on offense for a good bit of that year. he had a great year that year. They just didn't win some of the games, some of the bigger games, like the Florida game. I mean, he never gets credit for that Florida game because Tennessee gaffed no catch and they gagged it on the pick six going the other way. But he was, I mean, he put on in 2000, he did to Florida what Stevens did to Florida in 2001. Stevens gets all the credit for it because they won that game. Henry doesn't get credit for it because Tennessee didn't win that game. I don't know. AP, who, anybody else, any receiver, anybody else jump out to you that had a great season and didn't get credit for it?
Kelly Washington.
I mean, he got a lot of credit. He got a lot of praise. I mean, he was Hollywood Washington the next year, right? I mean,
yeah.
He burst onto the scene out of nowhere, but I mean, he drew pretty good. He got pretty good praise out of that deal.
I know it's different when you look at the betting odds compared to, I know Samson was just named a semifinalist for the running back award earlier this week, but like a week ago when I looked up the Heisman odds, he was 14th best odds to win. I mean, it's like, he's not going to win the Heisman, but are you kidding me? You mean to tell me there's 13 better players that, you know, in terms of offensive players this year in the country? Makes no sense.
Well, and I think that goes to also the point that Tennessee's fighting with the playoff committee a little bit right now. Perception is this offense is not very good.
Yeah.
Right? Dylan Sampson doesn't get any credit. He's good, but the perception of Tennessee is, man, they're having a really bad year offensively. Man, they're really down. And I think that's working against them in some people's eyes.
Yeah. Last one, Marcus Square Shrieker. Put these in order from happening first to last. Okay. Barnes Final Four. Caldwell Final Four. Vitello Second World Series Championship. And Heupel SEC Championship appearance. So most likely to least likely in terms of what happens first. Anybody want to go? Grant, go ahead.
Kelly. Kim Caldwell, I'm sorry, Final Four, because she's recruiting at the level she's recruiting at, and she's been here for 15 minutes, and women's college basketball, there's less parity in that sport than there is in other sports.
Wow.
Barnes Final Four, because they were 20 minutes away from it a year ago and flirted with it and got closer than I thought they would get.
The disrespect to Tony Vitello.
Well, I mean, I think it's just so hard to win it. Like, I'm still insane to
Grant
me that
Ramey,
he did it once.
Hater of Tennessee baseball.
I mean, no, it's just you got to do it again. Like, I don't know. It's just so hard to win that playoff format, and they did it once. It's just hard to imagine it happens again anytime soon because, I don't know. And he's the same thing, too. He's not recruiting. He's drafting. So maybe I'm completely out of order there.
Tennessee football was a quarter away from being in the SEC championship game if they finished with the lead. It's just hard. You know what I mean? Like, you got to have good draws in the tournament. You got to have good fortune. You got to avoid injury. You got to be creative. I mean, think about this. I mean, Tennessee baseball won a College World Series and a national championship and didn't have a Friday starter. And all you hear about in college baseball is who are the best teams in the preseason? Well, they got a Friday arm. I mean, they got a bullpen, a guy who could save their whole bullpen because he's a dominant Friday night guy. And Tennessee said, I would throw five guys at you and see what happens.
Think about it. LSU won the World Series a couple years ago when literally they had two starters. Paul Skeens, like, you didn't even have to account for Skeens out there. Like, you knew what he's going to give you, 8 innings.
Right.
He was going to throw 145 pitches, and he was going to give up a run or two. You didn't have to – I mean, it was automatic. You didn't have to account for him. So you plan your weekend for Saturday, Sunday, bullpen. I mean, it's just – and the fact that you just brought up, yeah, Tennessee didn't have a Friday night starter. It's
well, and think about basketball last year. Okay, I mean, they're 20 minutes away or a game away from being at the Final Four. If they get in a different bracket, what does that look like? Because that was a Final Four game. That regional championship game was the most Final Four game of any regional championship games. And Zach didn't get called for a foul, and now he can't play 20 minutes in an NBA game without.
I mean, if you show up at the SEC tournament and you beat Mississippi State and you have a pulse and you do something there, then you probably get a one seed. Like, that's where that one seed was lost. And I mean, you can think about that Florida State game to open the College World Series. It feels like there's five different instances where if something doesn't happen here, Tennessee loses that game. And now does Tennessee come back from the loser bracket and win the College World Series if they lose to Florida State to start with? And like, football's, you know, 14-3 up at Arkansas in October, and if they win that game, they're in the SEC title game. Well, how many years from now are there going to be two lost Alabama and two lost Georgia at the same time that you're trying to get past? Like, there's so many sliding door moments in all these sports. It's just insane to predict.
All that to say, the easy answer is this: Rick Barnes is one. It's going to happen in March or April. Tennessee football will be two. It'll be a year from now, and then Kim Caldwell will be in the Final Four the following March after Rick went, and then Tony will win title number two after having a year off from winning a title in June. So, you know, there you go.
And then Hubs Ramey and Austin Price, haters of Tennessee baseball.
And then Hubs will retire because might as well go out on top.
I will be mic dropping. I am out.
Hubs will be starting his book. Be ready to go. All right. Appreciate you guys, as always, for joining us here on the BallQuest Mailbag Podcast. As always, we give a big thanks to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions for allowing us coverage of this podcast. If you need roofing, siding, windows, or garage, you can contact Exterior Home Solutions today. They have been local. They have been trusted for East Tennessee, number one choice since 1999. That phone number is 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. For Grant Ramey, Austin Price, Brent Hubbs, I am Eric Kane. Appreciate you guys, as always, for joining us here on the BallQuest Mailbag Podcast.
You've been listening to the BallQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on BallQuest.